In a world where high school sports don't exist. Wait, no. We don't like that world. Different world, please. Ah, that's better. The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
All right. Good morning to you all out there listening on 1430 ESPN. This is the Central Valley Sports Report. And I am your host, Paul Edders, live here at First String Sports. For the next 2 hours, we're going to be talking about high school sports. This is a great time of year, obviously. We are, 8 weeks into the high school football season? It's mid-October. Well, October 12th, we could call that mid-October. Football playoffs are going to be here before we know it. I have some great guests lined up for today. We're talking high school football, a little bit of Fresno State football, a little bit of college football, a little bit of some of the stars of the past in the Central section. So love doing my show here from First String Sports. They are my day one sponsors. They love Central section athletes. They are committed to hear all the good stories and all the good stuff that's happening out there. I do my show from the Letterman's Jacket Room. There's only one place I want to do my show, and it's in here. Got Letterman's Jackets to my left, Sunnyside, Clovis West, Sanger, Fresno Christian to my right, Kerman, Bullard, Edison, behind me, Clovis North. They had a big win last night, Kingsburg, Sierra High School. So if you want to check out all the Letterman's Jackets, get fitted, if you're on the fence whether to buy one or not, no commitment, right? Come here and check it out and see all the different variations you can get. So First String Sports, a great place. They also have equipment and all the stuff that you need for athletics. So again, thanks to First String Sports. All right, we might as well do the Lee's Air Plumbing and Heating weather report too, because that's a big topic. Right now we're sitting at a nice cool 69 degrees with a high of 86 around 4 p.m. And we are finally seeing, looking at my iPhone right now, seeing 80 degrees and 70 degree temperatures, something we've been waiting for a long time. So they are finally here. Yesterday I had my big league tournament at the school where I teach and coach. There were 21 teams on our campus, 6 different locations, 3 volleyball courts, 3 football fields. And I'll be honest, that wore me out. I was in the sun for about 4 hours. It got to 89 degrees, but it felt a little hotter for some reason. And if this tournament, which is actually scheduled to be the week before, if this tournament was on the original date, it would have been 103 degrees during that tournament. That would have been way too much. It would have been just miserable. So I was happy for yesterday, even though it felt a little bit hot. But hey, great weather is finally upon us, and it should be. Again, we are in mid-October, so we're finally starting to feel some of that great fall weather. So last night we broadcasted the Tulare and Hanford game. Both teams were 6-0 coming into this one. It's my first time to Hanford in a long, long time. I don't think I've ever watched a football game there. You know, they're famous for their superior dairy, the ice cream. And did you guys hear that place is actually for sale? And if you want to buy it, it'll cost you a cool $2.5 million. So if you want an investment in ice cream, a well-established place, yeah, there is a superior dairy for you in Hanford. So, you know, famous for that, but they're also famous for their bowl. It's called the Neighbor Bowl, and it used to be more like a bowl, right? But they did some renovations, some nice lights out there. You know, they took out the berm, made it a little bit lower. So it says Neighbor Bowl. Looked very, very sharp, and the reason why they call it Neighbor Bowl is because it's shared with Sierra Pacific and Hanford West. Concession stands look great. And then they have this really neat-looking tunnel. It's like it's lit by some LED lights, red, and they do change the colors for whatever team is playing there. We saw that with the scoreboard. They were able to show us the different fonts they could use and the different graphics they could use for the different schools. But it was a pretty high-end looking section of the field. They extended the bleachers on the outside as well. And about the football game, all right? So Hanford coming in averaging 48 points a game, Tulare averaging 40. So we were joking like, this is going to be first team to 50. But nope, it was 14-8 at half. Devion Patterson took a short pass and went 81 yards. He's got some speed. Daniel Gomez looked pretty good as a quarterback. He's an impressive runner as well. He is tough to take down. He's a load, 205 pounds, 6'2". And then the defense for Hanford took over after that. They shut him out the rest of the way. Like I said, ended up being 33-8. The defense for Hanford, they have a 3-3-5 defense. That played right into the hands of Tulare. Jordan Crisp, the quarterback for Tulare, led the state in passing last year. But the D-line from Hanford was all over him. He had no time to throw the football. They were on point. There's some wild and wacky things that go on. Usually it does with Hanford and Tulare when they get together. It was like a fumble into the end zone. It was recovered by Hanford. One was for a touchdown and one was for a touchback. There was not a lot of punts. Standard punts, I should say. So Hanford doesn't like to punt. And we saw a few times they would go for it when it was 4th and 12, like in their own territory. They don't care. They don't care at all. Coach Ken Sanchez is like, hey, we know what we're about. We're not about to change it. Spread offense, get the snap off every 8 seconds. So the Bullpups improved to 7-0 and have a – well, looking at their schedule, they're set up to go undefeated during the regular season. They got Tulare Western, Mission Oak, and Lemoore. Lemoore's a little bit down this year. So I see Hanford maybe sneaking into the top division in the playoffs and getting a 5 or 6 seed. I don't see them breaking the top 4 in the track. We're going to get to those scores in a second. But, yeah, I think, Hanford's offense, 5 wide, everything's out of the shotgun. Like I said, don't like to punt. So they look good last night. I was the most impressive part to me was their defense. Their defense looked really, really strong. All right, so who is coming on the show today? Well, a little bit of a different format. I got Lewis Franklin coming on, and I believe son Tyler, quarterback of the team. They're coming on around 10:35, 10:40, and they had a big win last night. They beat Madera, who was playing really good football. They were 5-1 coming into this one. They beat them 24-14. Low-scoring game. Madera came in averaging about 40 points a game. So the defense, the athletes took over for the night. So we're going to be talking with Coach Franklin and son Tyler around 10. I don't know. We might as well call it 10:37. After the break, I got a couple fun stories for you guys. You guys heard of Trona? Trona High School or the town of Trona? Well, they are, believe it or not, in our section. And they have a unique field that I'm going to let you guys know about. It's been featured, that field, and the town's been featured in the New York Times. Yeah, I mean, it's wild. I can't wait for you guys to hear that story. All right, so let's go ahead and go over some scores from Thursday night and from Friday night. We'll start with some Thursday scores. There were 9 different games played on Thursday night. And one is the McLean and Roosevelt game. Battle Cedars, what they call it. McLean, 7-0 for the first time in school history, beat the Rough Riders 42-14. Coach Pancotti doing an amazing, amazing job with that program. Going to get a high seed. I believe they're base D5, so they could go up to D4. D4 is going to be a strong division. So congrats to McLean having a fantastic season. Able to watch them in person, and they got a lot of athletes and got a really good quarterback. It's going to go a long way. Taft defeated Chavez 37-2. Liberty, Bakersfield, and Frontier, one of the marquee matchups down south this year in Southwest Yosemite River action. Patriots took care of business, beat Frontier 25-20. So a lot of talk. Hey, Frontier, they might be the best team in Bakersfield. Well, they settled it on the field. They take that one on Thursday night. Another game down south in Bakersfield, Independence defeated Ridgeview 21-12. Selma beat Hanford West. I actually shut them out 20-0. And a game that I'm going to be talking to Austin Kemp about at the 11 o'clock hour, Clovis East and Central. Timberwolves beat the Grizzlies 34-26 at La Monica Stadium. Ty Miller and the guys looked really good. Central is now 0-2 in the track, something we haven't seen in a long time. Clovis East undefeated overall, 7-0 and 2-0 in league. But fireworks to begin the game. Kickoff return for a touchdown. Kickoff. kickoff return for a touchdown. So before we had a play from scrimmage, there were two touchdowns. But, yeah, Timberwolves look really strong, a little sloppy at times, but they won the game, and that's all that counts. So setting up a big matchup next week between Clovis East and Clovis. I can't wait to tell you guys more about that one. Bakersfield and Centennial, another big one on Thursday night. Bakersfield defeated the Golden Hawks 22-21 in overtime. Bryson Abbott, their star running back, scored the game-winning touchdown. But Centennial, man, they are playing strong this year. They're hanging in there. I think that's only their second loss on the season. Bakersfield undefeated, kind of right there with Hanford. We'll see how the rest of their season plays out. All right, so let's get to some scores from last night. Buller defeated Madera 24-14. I'm going to hear from Coach Franklin in a few minutes about that game. Good win for them. San Joaquin Memorial defeated Edison 40-6. Edison 0-7. Looking at Edison's schedule, I think, guys, this is unheard of. I think they're going to go 0-10. It is pointed in that direction because their final three games are against Sanger, Justin Garza, and Bullard. So, oh, how the Tigers have fallen in the last few years. They were defeated handily by the hands of the Panthers. And Sanger and Garza, that game was tied at 20. Sanger with the last 14 points in that one defeated the Guardians 34-20. Corcoran over Orange Cove 53-27. That's a lot of points. I think that's the high point this season. Last night. Lindsay beat Farmersville 10-6. Orosi 14. Granite Hills 8. And Woodlake with a nice win against Strathmore 20-19. And East Yosemite League action. El Dumonte holds on for a 1-point win. Defeated Mount Whitney 20-19. Golden West, talked about the Trailblazers a lot, looking strong, only one loss on the year, beat Porterville 28-14. And Redwood, after starting off 0-5, they get their second win in a row, defeating Menachie 21-6. In North Yosemite League action, Madera South defeated Fresno 42-7. Sanger West defeated Torres 40-37. Nice win by Sanger West. Sunnyside defeated Hoover 57-14, I believe. In that one, score's not up on the Cal Preps website, going off memory. In Northwest Sequoia action, there's another 50-point score. Chachilla 55, Fowler 29. And Liberty Madera defeated Minarets 35-21. That is Minarets' first loss on the season. So good win from Liberty Madera in that one. Scrolling down a bit, in South Sequoia action, Kennedy defeated Wasco 35-14. Shafter over Delano 41-13. Stockdale, oh man, I didn't see this one until right now. They got their first win of the year. They beat Garces 19-14. Tehachapi defeated North 48-7. Scrolling down, this one surprised me. Central Valley Christian defeated Kingsburg 28-14 on the road. So good win by Coach Arax in that one. And Kerman defeated Reedley 45-6. And how about them Eagles from Emmanuel defeated Sierra Pacific 40-0. I believe that's five shutouts on the season for Emmanuel out of seven games, 7-0. They've only allowed two touchdowns in the entire year. And how about this score? Sticking with the track. At one point, it was Clovis West 5, Buchanan 0. Buchanan scores a touchdown, and they win with no extra point, 6-5. That's a baseball score. So the Bears come back after losing last week to Clovis and defeat Clovis West 6-5. Clovis North, check this out, defeated Clovis High 35-14. That game was tied at 14 at one point. Clovis North pulls away in that one. So the Broncos looking really, really strong at this point in the season. Their only two losses are to SoCal Powers, Jay Serra, and Los Alamitos. And, hey, are they the team to beat? Well, they're going to – obviously three more games in the track. They are going to play Clovis East on the last game of the season, of the regular season. So Clovis North looking strong. They are healthy. And with those two running backs, they are definitely a force. All right, a few more scores for you. Continuing with that West Yosemite action, we mentioned that we were at Hanford and Tulare Union. The Bullpups take that one 33-8. Lemoore defeated Mission Oak 17-7. Tulare Western 39, Dinuba 15. Exeter defeated Washington Union. That Monarch team is really good, 36-14. McFarland over Parlier 30-18. Riverdale defeated Yosemite 43-12. All right, there is a snapshot. Tried to give you guys as much information as possible in some of those games. But, yeah, I mean, lots of really good football. Three more weeks, and then the playoffs are going to be here. They're going to be here before we know it. This season is absolutely flying by. All right, we're going to take a break now. When I come back, I got some fun information for you. I'm all about fun facts and things that I'm sure most of you don't know about, things that I'm learning about as well. That I mentioned that team from Trona, and I got some other cool information as well. You're listening to Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN. ESPN. I'm your host, Paul Metters, live here at First String Sports. If you miss any part of the show or other shows, you can go to 1430ESPNFresno.com, go under podcasts and Central Valley Sports Report. You can listen to all of them. This is year four of talking about high school sports. I'm having a great time doing it, not slowing down anytime soon. We all got home after 11 o'clock after the Hanford and Tulare game and right back at it. I wouldn't want to do any other thing than this on a Saturday morning. So I mentioned in my opener about this Trona High School. So you're probably like, why matters? Why in the world are you even talking about this? Well, first of all, if you guys didn't know, Trona High School is in our section. If you go to the Central Section website, you'll see them. You'll see them listed. They are an 8-man football program. They are they've been around for a long, long time. I think they were added to our section in 2015. I found a website. They were still considered SoCal. So, I mean, sometime after that, I don't know, maybe 18 or 19, should ask Commissioner Toss when they were added to our Central section. All right. So the reason why I'm bringing them up is because I did a little research. I see them on Max Preps. So when I'm reading scores to you guys during halftime of football games, I'm going through Max Preps because they're listed there, some of them, most of them. And I always see Trona. I'm like, really? I mean, why are they showing up on my Central section? Well, because they're part of the Central section. So I dug a little bit deeper into them. So where exactly is it first? Well, it's an unincorporated community in San Bernardino, California. Population of around 1,900 people right now. And it could be on your way to Las Vegas. So if you go to Vegas, right, Bakersfield 58, you go that way. You go through, like, Boron, right? They do play Boron. It's a little bit, I think it's a little bit south of that. And, of course, it's a desert town, right? It's southwest of Death Valley. Takes its name from the mineral Trona, abundant in the lake bed there. Zip code is 93562. It's known for its isolation and desolation. I mean, it's kind of a dying community. They do play 8-man football, and the reason why I'm bringing this up, because they play their football field in what they call the pit. It is an all-dirt football field. Not kidding. It's all dirt. And the reason why it's all dirt is because of the high saline soil in the dirt. It kills the grass. They literally cannot grow grass. They tried at one point, and it just dies within 24 hours. So it's dirt, and what they do is they water the dirt before each game, about 2 hours before, and then usually by the second quarter, it turns to dust. So New York Times has done an article on these guys and the community. It is one of only two football fields in the United States that plays on a type of surface like that. The other one is in Juneau, Alaska, and I pulled up a picture of that. It looks a lot nicer, the Juneau, Alaska one. It is dirt, but it looks a lot nicer. It's like a Yeah, it's right on the coast. But this, isn't that fascinating? It's fascinating to me. So there's tons of stories. You guys go ahead and look it up. Look it up for yourself. You'll be fascinated by the dirt field called the pit. I mean, guys have, you know, scratches and raspberries all over their arms when they play. Looking at an article from the Los Angeles Times. You mentioned the New York Times, but the Los Angeles Times as well. Yeah, there's a picture right up there. They've had some earthquakes in the past. The goalposts have fallen. There's like a tire. I'm sure they use this big old, you know, tractor tire for their drills. Goalpost is down. Sometimes they only have like 11 guys show up for practice. But, you know, it's just a fascinating story. So if you ever see Trona in the central section scores, now you know a little bit more. Right, you know they play eight-man football. You know they're in the desert. You know they play in the pit with dirt. So really cool stuff. You know, always root for those types of communities, and you know, kids look for ways to get out. Right, it's like I said, it's a desolate place. So look for ways to get out, and football is definitely an outlet for those guys. So cool stuff there. I do want to mention one more thing really quick. It's actually not a real feel-good story. If you guys follow California high school sports in SoCal, there's a really big program, and it's Narbonne, California, in the city section in Los Angeles. And what happened this last week is four coaches in that league, from Banning, from San Pedro, from Gardena, and from Carson, they signed a letter addressed to the city section commissioner. And they said, we are going to forfeit every game that we play them, because they've been getting smoked for years. So they've been accusing them of basically like paying players to play and bringing in transfers and giving them living situations, a lot of different benefits. They sent that letter out, and the coach actually replied. He responded, said, we haven't violated anything. We just try to do our best and give kids the best opportunity. But the coaches say, nah, man, we're not digging it. We're going to forfeit every game. And saw on Twitter, too, they were looking for games to play to fill in that week. So, yeah, I mean, in the spirit of the game, right, the spirit of high school sports, they just wanted it to be fair. They wanted, you know, equality and equity. Those are hot topics. But, you know, right, when you got public schools that are doing that, right? It's not a good look. It's not a good look. So these four coaches, man, they put their names out there. They put themselves out there. So they're like, well, we're not going to take it anymore. No mas. So I thought you guys might be interested in that. Good stuff there. Also want to mention Sunnyside. Talked about them last week. Had to forfeit four games for using a player in a JV and a varsity game. Section commissioners. Office said, nope, you guys are forfeiting those four games. They did beat Hoover last night, so they now have three wins on the season. But, yeah, that's kind of a black eye on the central section. You can't do that. You can't play a kid in a JV game and then an hour later, 45 minutes later, suit him up, have him play in a varsity game. So film came out of that, and had to forfeit four wins in that one. So, yeah, that's it's never fun to talk about, right? You always want to talk about the positive stuff. But it's a reality. It's out there. It happened. It's news. All right, we do have some good news, though. We got Bullard in the house right now, coming off a great win, 24-14, against a Madera team that only had one loss, was averaging 40 points on the season. We got Coach Lewis Franklin. And I see Tyler. Son Tyler is here as well. We're going to get to know them a little bit more and talk about their game last night and how the season's gone. And what they foresee the future for Bullard football is as well. You're listening to the Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN. All right, coming in smooth. Central Valley Sports Report, 1430 ESPN, Fresno. Thank you guys for tuning in. I saved that segment. I've been wanting to talk about other schools for a while, and went on a wild goose chase talking about this Trona school. Did you guys hear hear about that? You hear me at all talking about this dirt field that they play eight-man football? Can you imagine, Coach?
I've seen the pictures. I just don't know what it's like, what the surface is like. Is it compact? Does it get in their face? Like, how does it wear? I don't even know.
I think yes. I think all the That's wild. All right, we got Coach Lewis Franklin and son Tyler here from Bullard. They are currently 4-3. They defeated Madera 24-14 last night. So first of all, thank you guys for coming in. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having us. It's always a pleasure. Thanks, Paul.
All right, so let's walk through last night's win a bit. So first of all, you know, good win, right? I'm sure the bus ride or however you got back to school or where we're going after the game was a pretty fun one. We wake up this morning with the win. So how good does it feel, Coach, after those three losses to come back with the win?
It feels good because the wins are never as good as they seem. The losses are never as bad. And we played a tough stretch of our schedule. You know, Bakersfield's still undefeated. Clovis is still a really, really good school. And, you know, going at Sanger, that was a tough loss. And we felt like in those losses we were improving as a team. We just weren't getting the results we wanted because, we were kind of our own worst enemy in certain points. It's nice for seniors on senior night to get a win against Madera. That's a good, it's a well-coached team. They're physical. They bring it. And, that was a big win for us.
Tyler, how about for you? Like, you needed that win. You guys come out with a victory. What did it feel like for you last night?
It was great. Love winning. Nice to bounce back from that three-game stretch, like we said. Definitely as a young team, that was a tough three-game stretch, and nice to get a win, get some confidence back, and want to keep that confidence building as we go into CMAC and then playoffs.
All right, so what was the game plan against Madera? They were playing really good football, 5-1, averaging around 40 points a game. So what did you work on during the week? What was the game plan against those guys?
Our thing was we kind of know what our strengths are, and, you know, we wanted to kind of build upon those and get some of our playmakers in one-on-one situations where they can make plays, and we did that for the most part. We weren't maybe as efficient we wanted to as making those plays, and we definitely want to establish a run game. So I think one of the big things for us was being able to finish the game running the ball and run the clock out at the end. I think that's a big statement by our O-line and our running back, who's just been playing. He's had a heck of a year, Devin Laney, just in pass pro and just being physical. He's a difference maker for us.
Well, what kind of changes did you have to make on the, let's say the offensive side? What did Madera show you defensively that maybe you had to, like, adjust to or find the matchups on?
For us, it was just wondering, are they going to play as cover zero? Are they going to play cover one? Are they going to play zone? They're well coached, and they kind of do all three of those things pretty well. So it's just identifying the pressures and see how they're going to attack us. And then it was just making sure, I think Tyler and our O-line do a good job of making sure that they get us in the best protection possible. And we knew their idea was to bring plus one more than we could block. And I think that's what Tyler does well, is usually he can find us a good spot and get us to the matchup, you know, to give one of our guys a chance to make a big play downfield.
All right, Tyler, so what do you feel comfortable with going into that game, right? Again, coming off those three losses, Madera's coming in pretty strong. But what did you personally feel comfortable in going into the game?
I really just felt comfortable getting our guys the ball. We've actually been pretty successful throwing the ball down the field, so we got that a few times last game. We had a young guy, Tomas Dixon. He's been playing great, so we really liked our matchups with him going vertical and then just getting our guys the ball in space. Tyron Pree, he had a couple catches for big gains, so it was really just getting our guys the ball, letting them play, letting them have fun.
All right, so walk us through the game specifically. You said you got a late touchdown, kind of put it away. So just kind of walk us through the game. Who scored for you guys and all that?
Yeah, we ended up getting the ball first, which we normally don't get. And we came down and, on the shorter field goals playing at Fresno City, our field goal kicker made a 30-plus yard field goal. So it was like, that was a great statement right off the bat, even though you want to finish with a touchdown. And, you're looking at your quarterback come off field like he wants one more play. But that proved really to be pivotal because for most of the game we're up three scores, at the end. And I think it really allowed our defense to execute their game plan. They had to play behind the sticks a lot, Madera. And for us, if we can get teams behind the sticks and throwing the ball, I really like our unit. They're getting better each week. We felt like in some of those games our defense has been giving us great opportunities to win the games. And we felt like offensively we haven't done our job on the O side. Last night was great because it was just all phases of the game clicking, and we had a surprise onside kick that we got, but you know, we didn't get based on rulings, and you know, and then we had a special teams mistake, you know, on an onside kick, and it was just nice to see each time the defense just stepped up, make plays. Like, whatever happened, that play's over. Let's focus on the next one. So we're seeing a lot of growth with the young guys. Offensively, we only start really one senior, you know, two when Laney's in there. So it's nice to see these young guys getting confidence, making plays. We're not so young anymore, so that young is not an excuse. They have experience now, and we're starting to see it.
Tyler, so you had two touchdown passes, yep. Right? Can you go over what you saw on those plays, how long they were, and the reads that you made and the throws that you made?
Yeah, the first one was to the sophomore, Tomas Dixon, and we're just running a mesh concept. We caught him in zone. He, about 10-yard completion, he took it the rest of the way, made a great play. And then the second one was to Tyron Pree. It was a fourth down and five. There's a little bit of pressure, moved out of the pocket a little bit. Fired a comeback to Tyron Pree. He made a good play coming back to the ball and got upfield and did the rest. I think that was about 50 yards. So, yeah, he made a good play on that one for sure.
So you got the ball to the guys, but
yep,
they did a lot. A lot of the work, though.
Yeah, that's a lot of our offense, getting our skill guys the ball in space and letting them do work with it, have fun.
Coach, I want to ask you, like, was after the game, was there, you know, a good celebration? Was it a celebration, or was it just like, okay, we took care of business? Yeah, this is the type of football we can play. What did it feel like after the game?
Great question, because I feel like it was almost like a sense of relief from a lot of guys. Like, yeah, we still got this, you know, with this group. They're new to us. We're new to them. And the seniors, you know, there's a lot of distractions with senior night. There's emotion. There's a lot of, you know, other stuff that you worry about that's not between the lines of football that kind of gets them focused. But I thought the guys played great. Yes, a celebration. It was small and quick, but it was more like a relief, and it was just, you know, nice that they could celebrate the win with their families on senior night.
Oh, that's awesome. I didn't know senior night. That's cool. All right, so let's talk about those three games. So it was Bakersfield, Clovis, mm-hmm. and Sanger, mm-hmm. right? I mean, those are top 10 teams probably in the entire Central Section. Mm-hmm. After starting off 4-0. Coach, what'd you like learn about either your coaching style or adjustments you had to make, or what'd you learn about your team? I mean, you said it too. You're like, hey, the youngness is an excuse anymore. So what'd you learn during those three games?
So I feel like we went to Bakersfield and we were down, it was 13-7 at their place to start the fourth quarter. And to that point, we left a lot of plays on the field, both offensively and defensively. And, you know, no major adjustments needed to be made. We just couldn't, you know, make that big play, make that catch like that happened last night on fourth down, or bust that long, make the guy miss. And, you know, we just weren't making that big play. We were there. We were in it. We just couldn't make the big play, whether it's to get off the field on third and long, or it's, you know, to keep moving the chains on offense. So Bakersfield, it didn't feel that bad. The score looked bad, but proud of the boys, you know, on that one. So that's a fun place to play. That's a team we want to keep on the schedule for a long time. I want that to be a good rivalry. And there's a great host, great people there. Then against Clovis, I got to do a better job preparing the kids. I don't think we were prepared for that environment. There, you know, it was pretty much a sold out place on their side. It was loud. Some of our communication stuff, we weren't communicating super well. So that was on me more than anything. And then Sanger, what another great environment. So I just look at those three games in a row. I think if you're a high school football player, you want to play those games. It's the best environment, so you don't see that anywhere but the Central Valley. So those were fun, but I thought the moments might have been a little too big for us, you know, at that point. I'd love to play them again. You know, definitely want to keep all those guys on the schedule and keep strengthening the schedule. But I think, like, you know, what do you think, Ty? Would be great to play them at their places again.
Yeah,
next year.
Sure. Would love to see them in the playoffs. Love to see them next year. It was all fun environments. It makes football fun when you're playing environments like that.
Did you learn something, Tyler, through those games as well? I mean, football is a tough sport, right? And when you're the quarterback, all eyes are on you. The team goes a lot of times when the quarterback goes. So, I mean, what are some of your takeaways during that rough stretch?
Takeaways, those are tough games. You learn about the toughness of your teammates, who you can trust in situations, who you can't. And I think overall, as we went through the stretches, we saw more toughness, more maturity build. So that was nice to see, because really regular season, you want to develop and get ready for playoffs. And I think we did that in those three losses. We learned a lot.
Good. Yeah, great answer. And then you guys came away with a really good win last night. So, Coach, I want to ask you, are there any players that maybe you had your eye on before the season, and maybe like, hey, maybe this is going to give this guy some playing time. Maybe we can rotate this guy. Are there like some guys that have really stepped up lately? Some guys that have maybe surprised you and your coaching staff that you leaned on?
Yeah, I think a lot of, we had high expectations for all the kids, but I think Tomas Dixon has turned out to just be just one of the most explosive kids I've ever coached, and he's only a sophomore. He reminds us a lot of those talented kids we had at Clovis West that went on to do bigger and better things. You know, Devin Laney, just an unselfish, you know, running back who
– Is he a senior, though?
He's senior, okay. You know, but it was – he had a tough year last year, so it's nice to see him get back to his form that he had the sophomore year, they were saying. And he's just been just a – maybe at times, maybe even our best lineman at times, just a real physical, strong kid, great energy, just does a great job. And, you know, then you start looking at other guys that are just, you know, Mr. Consistent, like Asher Armstrong on defense. He's always in the right spot, leads us on the chaos chart, always creating plays and just being in the right spot at the right time. Nate Flores is another linebacker that hadn't played football since seventh grade. We got him out. He's a senior. You know, so even some of these, you know, these guys are, you know, they might be seniors, but they're new to us and in football, and just nice to see the growth of the team and the unit. And then when you add in someone like Donald Turner, who just played his second game with us, he's a big, big, big guy for us on the back end at safety that really just kind of keeps everything in front of him, and he's a dynamic player. So, yeah, a lot of guys are stepping up.
All right. Chaos chart. I can't let you go without explaining that. So you just said, all right, high on the chaos chart. What's this chaos chart you're talking about?
Our defense coordinator is awesome, Michael Holes. He does a great job, and he's just got the best presentations. But in the corner it says create chaos. So these are sacks. These are interceptions. These are tackle for losses. These are making solo tackles out in the field, you know, and he tracks it. And basically it's how the defensive coaching staff awards the player of the game each week. And you know, Asher hasn't won them all, but he's always first or second, and he's really separated himself. Had a huge game last night, had a pick, had a sack, had some tackle for losses. The kid's amazing. He plays hockey on the weekends. He's up in Tahoe last weekend. The kid's just the ultimate competitor. You know, you wish you had more Ashers. They're just great, great, great kids. So that's kind of what the chaos chart is. They track it, and it's pretty awesome.
That's cool. That's cool. And you mentioned Tahoe. You're familiar with Tahoe as well. We talked about that last time you were on the show, so a lot of connections there. Tyler, how has the trust factor been with your D line and your wide receivers? I mean, to be honest, right? I mean, you guys put up some amazing stats those first three or four games of the season. I saw all those clips, and you were on point with those guys. But the trust factor, right? Just kind of what's been the timeline, and how much do you trust your guys now?
Yeah, definitely building trust every week. We got luckily getting to Bullard end of second semester. We got a lot of winter and spring working with 7-on-7, did a lot of 7-on-7. So was able to build a lot of trust then. But then obviously we had new guys coming in like Donald Turner. He came late in the summer. So it's just been about continuing to build trust. O-line's been playing better every week. We've got a new guy back. We got Donovan Atterbury back. Broke his wrist last week, and he's been another huge addition to beef up that O-line. We have Dwayne Dotson. Just got eligible last week. Hopefully we can get him in, get him helping our O-line out. But yeah, definitely every week I've got more trust in the O-line to be able to step into some throws that I wasn't stepping into previously. Yeah, so building trust for sure.
That's awesome. That's a good answer. Coach Franklin, I want to ask you about your, you know, the difference. You came from Clovis West, offensive coordinator. You know, you played at probably one of the best public school leagues in the state of California. Now you're coaching in the CMAC. What are you seeing difference-wise between the two conferences? Maybe not necessarily skill-wise, but I'm talking about scheme-wise, and you know what those programs are about. Is there smash mouth? Are they spread? Right? Like, what kind of difference are you seeing?
Yeah, I think so far we, you know, only seeing Sanger, you know, in person in Madera. Both those teams schematically just give you fits because there's not a lot of carryover from the Sanger week of preparation to the Madera week. You couldn't pick, you know, there are some similar blocking schemes, but, you know, overall schematically they're so unique. So I think what you see is you see a lot of more unique teams in the CMAC, which is kind of reminds me of older leagues I've been in. And, you know, in the track, there's a lot of carryover. There's more similarity because of, you know, kind of like you were talking about the skill wise of the players. I think so far Coach Logue at Sanger does a great job with what he has. And, you know, Coach Kenny, I think that, right, yeah.
Palinelli, yeah.
I couldn't say his last name, sorry.
Palinelli.
Yeah, there we go. I think both those coaches are doing a great job. They don't have is maybe the depth of the skill, but, man, those guys make sure they get their playmakers the ball. And, you know, that's a sign of a good coaching staff each week that does that.
So you guys finish with, which is strange to say, right, seven games in, finish with Garza, Memorial, and Edison. Right, coming off, again, another good win last night. How do you want to see their teams react in those games? What do you expect in those games?
For us, we want to keep winning the turnover battle, which we won last night, which is huge. We want to make sure we're not self-inflicting any mistakes. And, you know, we had a lot of those issues at Sanger with that environment. We had some false starts and just, you know, procedural penalties that we kind of eliminated at our home game. So hoping that we continue that and, you know, we kind of get out our own ways and we let our kids have fun. Garza is a really strong team. They face adversity themselves. They're using their second string quarterback, but he's playing great. I know they probably get some guys back. I heard they're going to get a lot of those guys back from, you know, when they've had to sit out. So we'll be interested to see what they roll out, and that's going to be fun. Then Memorial is, you know, kind of come back to they look like more of a smash mouth team, and then you finish up with a big rivalry game with Edison. So.
Yeah, Memorial, I mean, they really haven't been blown out that much in their losses. And, you know, I had that win against Edison last night. So, I know David Bell is a really good running back for the Panthers. All right, Tyler, I want to ask you this about play calls. What is I'm going to ask you, what's your favorite play call? Right? When you see, you know, you look in the sidelines, you see your coach is giving you the signal. You're like, all right, can't wait to run this one.
That's a tough question.
You don't have to give me you don't have to give anything away, right? This a team's going to use
I don't
against
know.
You, but what
I think
do you like?
I like just four verts. I like throwing verticals, and I like running the ball. I like QB run stuff. I'd say those would be my two favorite. Would just be vertical, throwing the ball vertically, and running the ball. I love running the ball.
All right, what about you, Coach? What plays do you like to run? What are your favorites?
I think we want to play to his strengths, and we like him definitely having vertical opportunities where we can, you know, get those guys the balls in mismatches. But we also are okay with him on a pass play, just tucking the ball and running.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. College, right? You're only a junior. You got a couple college offers, right? Is that the goal, or what are some of your offers right now? What are your goals for the?
Yeah, currently next level? I have Montana State right now. It's the only one. I have interest from a couple others, but just want to get the best film I can this year, and then see what I can do in the spring and summer and see what I end up with.
Awesome. Coach, where do you guys see yourself in playoffs? Is that a bad question? You got three more games, right? But, I mean, kind of always thinking about it in the back of your mind, like, hey, where might we land? This team's doing okay. Is this team loses here, right? Like,
yeah.
You got thoughts on that?
Yeah, you definitely find yourself rooting for teams you played. That'll beat you. You know, like, we follow Bakersfield now, which I never thought I'd do, right? And, you know, our athletic director, he does a great job every Monday. He kind of charts it out and lets us know who we're playing each week. So I think right now he said we're a D2 team, and, you know, our goal is to get to the highest bracket possible. We've been playing like we probably should be a D2 team. I think when we play good, though, we can move up into that 1AA. So I hope we're playing our best football here down the stretch, and we'd like to kind of move on up if we can. If we can, you know, jump whatever the teams may be. I know it's all computer ratings, but try to go 1-0 each week. And after the Edison week, we'll be excited to just keep playing football because we need all the games possible to continue to grow this program.
Awesome. All right, one more question here for you guys. You got a game that you're specifically interested in this weekend, right? So we can relax a little bit. It's the weekend. We finally made it. So you got a college football game or an NFL game that you're looking forward to? Tyler?
College games? What are the college games? I'm not sure. What are the college
Texas,
games?
Texas, Oklahoma, week? Right?
Yeah. We got a big Texas fan on our coaching staff, Janzer. He's rooting hard for Texas. I would say I have a lot of interest in the Ohio State at Oregon, just Chip Kelly going back to his place, you know, that he built. And I just really interested in seeing that. Love seeing the old Pac-12 have success this year in whatever conference they're in. You know, we went to
hard to keep track.
Yeah, Tyler was invited to the Cal game last week, and that was really cool to see Cam Ward live. And what an amazing game that was.
Oh,
if
you were
stayed
there?
Up late enough, yeah, we were there. What a great game. Holy cow.
Oh, gosh.
I don't know, what did you remember?
Yeah, that was a great atmosphere for Berkeley. We'd been to Berkeley before, and seeing that stadium sold out full, that was a great environment for sure.
What
with the college game day, too.
Yeah.
It was a great environment to play football.
Well, they started college game day at 6 a.m., right? Oh, yeah. And then didn't play till later. And then, what, yeah, the game ended at like 11:20?
It was late. Yeah, we didn't get home. It was almost 3 a.m. So it was worth it, though. Like he said, when they went down 20, he's like, this is his Heisman moment. And yeah, sure enough, it's like he kind of felt it in the stadium. Like, it got quiet.
It did. Yeah. They kind of knew, right? Yeah, don't let him score once. No. Don't let him score twice. Yeah. All right, we're in big trouble.
Yeah, so that was fun. So I think the Oregon-Ohio State game.
Okay, good stuff. All right, thank you guys for coming on. Really appreciate it. Coach Franklin, always love talking to you and getting texts from you late at night after games. So I appreciate you. And, Tyler, good luck the rest of the way.
Thank you.
Thank you, Paul.
All right, after the break, we're going to be talking with Austin Kemp for a full hour, man. I can't wait for this next section. It's going to be a lot of fun. You're listening to the Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN.
In a world where high school sports don't exist. Wait, no. We don't like that world. Different world, please. Ah, that's better. The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN. Just had a really good conversation with Coach Franklin at Bullard. Does a great job there. First year head coach. It's always hard, right? It's always hard when you go to a new program and replace a legendary figure like Don Arax. You're bringing in a whole new system, offensive philosophy. Your son is coming over as the quarterback. Yeah, lots of things to get through, but, yeah, I had a really good win against Madera last night, 24-14. Yeah. And, the rest of their schedule, it looks, a couple winnable games in that one as well. Bringing in Austin Kemp right now for a full hour. I've had like McKay Christensen on the show, Stephen Vogt, phone interviews, and those lasted an hour long, but I don't think I've brought on a guest live for 2 hours. I've known Austin for a while now. What are we going to say, 10 years?
Yeah, we'll call
2015?
It 2015? Yeah, we'll
call
it. Used
to see you on the sidelines at football and baseball games. I'm like, I think that's that Kemp kid that I've read about in the past and his brother Trenton. So, yeah, let's strike up a conversation. And we did a podcast for a while and a website and, yeah, just a wealth of knowledge with high school sports because he not only played, grew up in it, but coached as well. So, Austin, happy Saturday to you, my friend.
Yeah, happy Saturday. I think, you know, we have a lot of experience talking for hours on end, so I think this will go pretty smooth.
Yeah, this hour is going to fly by. Wearing your Ohio State, is that?
Oh, yeah.
Do you get a lot of people giving you grief sometimes, like Fresno, Ohio State? What are you wearing that thing? It's not a Bulldogs pullover.
I always get the people who are just like, oh, have you lived there? And I'm just like, no. And I was like, I don't really care. I mean, I'm not a fan gatekeeper. I root for who I want to root for.
Well, yeah.
So I'm a Buck.
Well, like, oh, you start rooting for them when
exactly.
They start winning games?
Exactly. I mean, hey, okay. At this point, I've been diehard for about 20 years now, so I'm good with that.
Okay. All right. You've seen the program go through a lot, right?
100%.
What was that sweater, you know, Jim Trestle, right, with that mm-hmm. famous sweater and Tattoo Gate. I don't know. What do they call that, right,
yeah,
when they got
tattoo
busted?
Gate. I was at Jim Trestle's last game he's ever coached. I was at Urban Meyer's last game he ever coached.
Don't come to any of my games,
right,
then,
because
that might be my last game.
True.
That's bad luck. All right, so we had a little bit of fun off air. I asked you if you heard of this team called Trona. Again, this I'm mentioning this because it's just fascinating, right? And so I showed you some pictures of that all dirt field. Look at this one. Look at that. How do you describe this picture? There's what, about 15, maybe 12, 13, 14 players. And there was a couple of them are holding bags, and it's just dirt is flying everywhere. How'd you like to play on a field like that? What are you thinking about that?
So you texted me some of these questions you were going to ask this morning, and you said you're going to ask about Trona High School. And I was like, I don't even know what that is. And so I got here. It's an 8-man football team, and they have a stadium in San Bernardino, mm-hmm. part of the Central Section somehow. And it's called The Pit. All it is a dirt pit, and we're looking at a picture right now of players running on the field, and it's just a bunch of dust kicking up. That is absolutely wild.
It's insane.
For you people who used to be, like, into video games in the, like, early 2000s, mid-2000s, it looks like maybe, like, NFL Street, like one of those fields, or it looks like a backyard football field that you would just, like, randomly get put at, and it's just a dirt field.
I'm looking at the press box here, and it actually says Griffith Field. So more questions are happening. You see the sun coming down and the mountains there, and right, it's just bad soil. That's why they can't grow grass. But I didn't even mention their record this year. So the Mighty Tornadoes are 6-2, and they whooped up on Kern Resource Center last night. So big win for them, 34-7.
Yeah, and you know, and you keep looking at that field, like you gotta be tough to play on that field. And I'm not sure how our local Fresno Christian 8-man team is doing, but if they end up playing Trona in the pit in the playoffs, I think you take your radio show down there and broadcast it.
I'd be eating dust for a week, though. I would not be able to get that out of my mouth.
Maybe it starts raining in November and it becomes a mud bowl.
Oh, great. Yeah, you know what? Let's set that up. Fresno Christian at Trona. We will be there, all right? We'll broadcast that game. We'll go to their one restaurant in town, mm-hmm. grub up, and then call a game.
100%. You might have to wear, like you said, maybe wear like a mask, or else you might be sneezing the entire broadcast.
All right, let's move on. So I didn't know, but you were at the Clovis North and Clovis game last night. So, you know, Clovis North showed us a lot last week. In their win, but it's tied 14-14, but North, they're looking pretty strong, aren't they?
Yeah, they are, and, you know, it was actually a pretty interesting tale of two halves, not to kind of sound cliche, but obviously 12-minute quarters in high school football, and I thought that for about 22 minutes in the first half, Clovis High didn't dominate, but they looked like the better team for the first 22 minutes. They were having success running the ball. I don't have the stats in front of me, but I don't think Clovis North in the first half probably rushed for more than 50 yards. They couldn't really get anything going. And on the flip side, like Deegan Rose was throwing some good passes. He threw a touchdown. Like I said, they were running the ball well. And then when there was a minute and a half left, Clovis North was down 14-7. They ran a 1-yard hitch to Tyree Sams, mm-hmm. and he goes 80 yards down the field, and so that tied it up 14-14. Clovis gets the ball back, interception, and then you're looking at about a minute left, and it's 14-14, and Clovis North just goes down the field and scores again. So it was
21-14.
It was 21-14 and a half, but it was 14-7 with a minute and a half left until halftime, and then it was just kind of like a stampede of points to end the half, and that kind of just flipped it. And obviously Clovis had some opportunities to get back into the game in the second half, but then that's where Clovis North had a lead. They started finding a little bit more success on the ground as the game went on. But it was really, it was a Clovis North passing attack that kind of won that game for him. It was Lucas Smith.
So he got the start.
So,
or not?
Davis Wilson started.
Okay.
He got hurt the second or third play of the game. Didn't return. Lucas Smith comes in, throws three touchdown passes. Not like the best, like statistical, I think he was like 6-for-11 for like 135 yards, but, three touchdowns. And, when you have a guy like Tyree Sams catching two of those and he can just run around a defense, he kind of turned the game on a whim, and kind of, that's what it was.
So what did that tell you though about Clovis North, right? We know what they do on the ground, you know, they like to control the clock, but is that something that kind of surprised you, or something that, yeah, okay, so now North might have a different dimension?
So I was pretty surprised at how well Clovis was defending the run game last night, and not that I was expecting them to kind of come in and get rolled over, but I thought Clovis North would kind of do their usual thing like they do against Clovis schools, and they couldn't that entire first half. And it was good to see a quarterback be able to go out and put points on the board himself, because I mean, that's always going to be the question. If Clovis North gets down, when they have to throw, can they? Granted, like I said, it's easier when you have a guy who can outrun a defense, but you still got to make the throws. You still got to execute. And it was probably a really good thing that they had to win that game by throwing three touchdowns, and they were explosive plays. So I don't think it's perfect yet for Clovis North, the passing game, but they did show that if they need to, they can complete the big plays down the field and get things going through the air if they needed.
All right, so you did a great job breaking down why Clovis North was able to pull away. The passing game opened some things up, especially with that Sams when you got that 100-yard. And that was cool. I saw the highlight, right? So he sprints, and then he, like, crosses the end zone and puts his chest out like he's crossing the finish line. That was cool.
And he had another one, like the other one right before half. It was just like a rollout pass. It was super simple. Like, I don't know. From the top of my head, it was like a 5-10-yard pass. He he gets the corner going inside, and then he just plants his foot in the ground, gets to the sideline, and literally just runs around him. But like when you run a 10, 400 meters, I don't think there's very many DBs in Clovis that can do that.
So, I mean, what can you say about Clovis? You said they look good for 22 minutes, look like the better team. Why do you think they maybe, not necessarily fell apart in the second half, but why do you think Clovis North was able to win that game?
I don't think it was a falling apart. I think that Clovis North made the adjustments. That coaching staff did a great job. Probably changed some things up with their pre-snap looks, maybe bring someone else into the box to stop the run game. But honestly, their defensive line, and I've had questions about Clovis's offensive line and pass protection the whole year, and kind of late second quarter into the second half, I just didn't think they could pass protect and keep Deegan upright enough. They kept Clovis High. They kept running the ball pretty well in the second half.
With Maddox Merrill?
With Maddox Merrill, okay. And he was a big part of that, but they would get to a third and five, something like that, and they wouldn't be able to convert, which, when you don't convert enough, you're going to get behind the chains, and it is what it is sometimes. But I thought Clovis North got after the Clovis O-line, especially in pass protection.
All right, we're gonna talk in a few minutes. We're going to get to the remaining games in the track and what's impressed you with all the teams, but – Austin, you check your phone quite often for scores and updates. I saw a baseball score out there between Buchanan and Clovis West. It was 5-0 for a while. They put up a five spot
for a long time.
For a long time. Next thing I looked, it was 6-5, and then the next thing I looked, the game was over. So, do you have any thoughts on that game? Did you hear anything? I mean, have you ever heard of a 6-5 football game before?
So I was checking the score. I was at the Clovis North game, and I was checking my score the whole time, right, for Buchanan and Clovis West. And I saw 5-0 in the second quarter, and I was like, that's weird. And I I looked at Max Preps to make sure I was on the right sport. And I was like, oh, no, this is a football game. And then it was 5-0 at halftime. And I was like, okay, that's odd. And then I think it was 5-0 until the fourth quarter. And then there was a deep touchdown pass that Buchanan hit to make it 6-5. And they went for two and missed the extra point. So then it was it was a weird score, right? We're not used to seeing that score in football. But as we have kind of seen this year, Buchanan, that I believe they have a legitimately good defense. If when they're going to win games, it's going to be because of their defense. As we saw last night, Clovis West is kind of the same thing. They're just young. They have a freshman quarterback, freshman starting running back. And, when you have that kind of youth on your team, sometimes it's just going to be hard to be consistent week to week. And you might not know what is going to happen play to play even when you have so much youth. But, I didn't see the actual game, so I don't know if it was like a sledgehammer defensive game or if there was mistakes being made.
Probably played between the 35s, right? Well, wouldn't you think? Right in the middle of the field.
So, yes. I know Clovis West got down to the 15-yard line with 3 minutes left, down 6-5. They missed a field goal.
Ooh, okay.
They got the ball back with a minute and a half left, got to the 13-yard line, set up a game-winning field goal attempt with 3 seconds left, and that one was blocked. So they had their opportunities, obviously couldn't convert. When I was following the game cast, there seemed like there was a few turnovers as well for each team. So. Okay. Maybe an ugly game, but hey, when you're a defensive team like Buchanan is this year, I think you're probably going to welcome an ugly game because that kind of goes right into what you want to happen.
Well, they're 6-1, they're 1-1 in the track, and looking at the Max Preps here, this is why you can't trust the internet, right? So looking at their stat tracker, somebody checked in, and they automatically put the score as 73-5. Buchanan over Clovis West, and then pass completed for a touchdown, 79-5, and then 81-5 final. So this is one of the reasons why you can't trust everything that you see.
That's someone who must be a Golden Eagles hater right there because he was trying to juice those numbers.
He was trying to juice. Okay, guys, we're on you. The game wasn't 81-5. Nope. We're going to go by the 6-5 score.
And you know what? Good for Buchanan. They we've talked about how last season was dreadful for that. I think it was 2-8, and they're sitting at 6-1, and they have a hard schedule coming up. We're not going to sugarcoat it. They have Central still. They have Clovis East still. They have Clovis North. But you know what? No matter how those games finish, they're going to finish the regular season with a winning record.
They are. Yep.
And that is a huge improvement to what what happened last year.
So Thursday night, you and I were able to check out in person without having to talk about it on air, the Clovis East and Central game. Lots of storylines in that one, right? Central 0-1 coming in. Clovis East undefeated. Just kind of what was your overall synopsis of the game? What stood out to you? What was the final? 34-26?
34-26. There you go. Central obviously was driving for a game-tying touchdown on the 9-yard line with 40 seconds left, and they couldn't convert a 4th-and-1, 4th-and-2-ish. Central, so coming in, I thought Clovis East, I've been kind of telling people, we've been talking, like, they are the most impressive offense I've seen in a few years in our section, passing the ball, running the ball, got the quarterback play, got the receiver play. I thought, you know, Central gave up 34 points, obviously one on a kickoff return, but I thought their defense played pretty well. They were very physical. They got Ty Miller off his spot in the pocket quite a bit. But there's just Clovis East is just too much because you can cause some of these negative plays, you can get them out of their rhythm, but at the end of the day, they've got a running back that can take it to the house any play. Ty Miller can still deliver the ball on the run when he's under duress, and they still have Harold Duvall at receiver. Yeah. They have a couple of receivers that can beat you one on one, and it's just
well, the running back that you mentioned, Lindsey Graves, and played last year as a sophomore, got some carries. You know, I what I like about Clovis East right now is, you know, he's their best running back, but he's not a workhorse, right? He's going to be fresh the rest of the way. He's probably only getting 12 to maybe 15 carries a game, but Graves, man, when he ran that 53-yarder.
He's electric.
Electric.
It's just a dimension that it's just so hard to prepare for because I've been very adamant that I think Ty Miller is the best player in this section this year, and I don't care about, like, what happens, like, predicting what they'll do in college or at the next level. I'm just talking about high school. I think he's the best player in our section this year. So then, if you're a defensive coordinator, you're saying, okay, well, they run these super wide splits at receiver. They play 3 receiver sets, 4 receiver sets. You know, it's like, okay, well, how am I going to defend it? Are we going to sell out to stop the pass? Are we going to put 5 people in the box? But if you do, like you said, you got Lindsey Graves coming in, and he's one of the fastest players in the section, and it's just going to – it's hard. It's hard of how you are going to choose to defend Clovis East. And honestly, I thought Central did a pretty good job, but it's because their defensive line, I feel like more times than not, did win their individual matchups. It just took a bit too long for them to get their offense going. And they're young. Obviously, we've talked about Central being young. They have a sophomore quarterback. They have a few sophomore receivers, a junior running back. Some of them are experienced, but at the end, like, they're still young. They found success in the second half. It took them, their offense didn't put anything on the board in the first half. They were down 21-6 at half, and their TD was a kick return.
Yeah.
And, you know, if their quarterback makes maybe a few more of those throws in the first half, miss some guys in the second half too, maybe Central gets the win, but that's why you got to play a complete game when you play a good team like Clovis East.
Yeah, Central, you know, lots of sophomores and juniors are playing, you know, football on the track, and it's a different level. You got to bring your A game every Friday or Thursday, like Central. Mm-hmm. I think they got another Thursday game.
But
this year.
With that said, though, I think, like, come playoff time, Central at this point, you're probably looking at them being what, a 4-ish, 5-ish seed.
Yeah, I mean, Hanford, they probably going to run the table, be 10-0, but is it going to be? I mean, Central, could they go 1-4, 2-3? Like, almost as the best case scenario.
They're not going to go 1-4 in the track. They're not going to go 1-4 in the track. They'll go 2-3 or 3-2, and they'll get, like I said, like a 5-ish seed. And you get that team in the playoffs when you're a higher seed. Maybe, I mean, the 1 or 2 seed is going to end up playing them. That's a dangerous game.
So, you mentioned a few minutes ago, Ty Miller, you think is the best player in the section. I mean, there's arguments for that, right? I like McKay Mattson's a stud.
Oh,
I mean, there's just lots of ways to talk about these kids, but what do you like about that kid? 4-year starter, a gamer, small in stature, but is thick, right? And is very mobile, throws a beautiful. what, you know, Andy Bogart was at the game, and I didn't realize it, and you probably did too, until he said it. That throw that went for an incompletion, 65 yards.
In the air.
In the air.
Yeah. And I want to clarify too, like, when I say best player in the section, that's more me saying I think he's the player of the year.
Got it, yeah.
And
fully
and,
understood.
And he's my player of the year, and like you said,
most valuable, right?
Most
how
valuable.
About that? There you go. You could say that.
And it's because I don't think Clovis East, I don't think they can run this offense unless he was the quarterback, because one, he makes the correct read more times than not, and they put a lot on his plate to make those reads. Number two, his arm strength is insane. Mm-hmm. Like you said, he threw that 60-65 yard pass that was maybe off the receiver's hands. That was a good, he didn't just chuck it just to chuck it. It was a good throw. Traveled in the air the entire way. So he has got the arm strength, and he's got the accuracy. Like, he's so good at converting those mid-range third downs if he needs to. If it's second and 12, he can get half of it back easily. The Central game, how many fourth downs did he convert on their like, it wasn't their go-ahead touchdown, but it was to go up by two scores late. I think he
like converted the fourth and sevens, fourth and eights,
he
right?
He converted a fourth and eight, a third and eight, and a fourth and 12, and they were the easiest conversions that you could have made.
Didn't panic.
The receivers, they stopped at the sticks, and it's like they schemed him open, but he still made an accurate throw. So he's just so in control. And then we were super impressed, too, with one of the touchdown drives that ended with a speed option going left, and he's obviously a righty, and he attacked the outside linebacker was out there. He attacked the outside, the linebacker's inside shoulder, pitched it with his left hand, TD Clovis East, and it's just like
smooth.
What are you gonna do, man? Like, how are you gonna defend it? I want there to be a game this year to where he has the ball like down one, or they're tied with 2 minutes left, and I just want to see him have to go like 80 yards, because like I think he would, but I just want to see it, because I think that kid's a gamer.
Deegan Rose, you've seen him, what, now, four times this year?
Yeah, quite a bit.
Still only a junior. Was on the show a couple weeks ago. Can make any throw, right? He's got the size, probably close to 6'2", probably only 6'1". Throws a pretty football. What do you like about him? Like, what you know, stands out to you?
Yeah, like similar to Ty Miller, there's two things I'd say is, again, like the mid-range throws, he's just so deadly on, and it's not only making the right decision, but delivering it accurately. I feel like it's automatic, but Deegan can throw on the run so well, like getting him out of the pocket, if he is scrambling to his right, scrambling to his left, whether it's a scramble or like a bootleg, it's just an easy completion, and he makes it look easy, but those are not easy throws, and just like you have that confidence to be able to get him out of the pocket and make those throws is a huge plus for our coaching staff. But yeah, both of those guys being in the track is special, and then they get to match up this week, so that's going to be awesome.
They do.
Clovis East, Clovis High at LaMonica. I think Clovis is the home team.
Okay.
So I think that game's going to be packed.
It's a marquee game. Let's go.
It lost its luster a little bit with Clovis losing last week, but I think it's still the game of the week, and it's still going to be packed.
Yeah, good thoughts. All right, awesome. We're going to take a break, and we're rolling all the way up to the top of the hour. We got a lot more stuff to talk about. I want to see how you like all the teams in the track. How you like their chances? Is East going to go 5-0? They play Clovis North in the last game. If both teams are 4-0, what's that going to look like? So we're going to talk more with Austin Kemp after the break. You're listening to the Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN. Welcome back, Central Valley Sports Report, 1430 ESPN. I got another segment here with Austin Kemp. So spent a lot of time talking about the track, breaking it down, talking about Clovis East and Clovis High, Clovis North, obviously. So we're going to switch now to just predictive, where teams stand in the playoffs. So you guys know the playoff system is different this year. In Division One, so eight teams, the top eight teams are going to be, I think it's the 1AA. I always get that confused. To me, it seems like the 1A should be the higher division, but I think it's 1AA is the higher division, the top eight. And then 9 through 16 is going to be the other division. It goes by the Cal Preps website. If you're a base D1 or D2, You're going to be in D1 if you're ranked in the top 16. Some teams might get pushed into D2 if you're a base D1. All right, Austin. So we're looking at the Cal Preps right now. They do a good job. I hit the old refresh button. So it's updated. It's populated. So Clovis East is standing alone right now in the number one spot. They'll stay there unless they lose. They are 7-0. Then you got Clovis North and Clovis. And then Central, Hanford is 5. Bakersfield is 6. Buchanan right there at 7. And then Liberty of Bakersfield had that good win against Frontier. I mentioned that in my opener. So good win by Bakersfield. They're 4-3, but they are currently 8th. I don't know. You want to talk about that? Like, what, do you think it's going to shake out like that? I mean, you got Buchanan at 7, but who's going to slide in there? Maybe Sanger? Maybe, couldn't be Bakersfield, maybe Frontier?
It's going to be interesting, like, what the bottom of this division, what are we calling it technically? Like, it's Division 1A.
Yeah.
So, like, that top division of Division 1.
We'll call it the top division.
The top division, right? So, it's the bottom half, not the bottom half, but the bottom, like, last two or three spots is going to be interesting to see how it shakes out, because Liberty is slotted at 8 right now, and they're going to win that league, it looks like. So, like, I think every week they'll kind of continue to climb. Buchanan still has 3 extremely tough games. Not saying they'll lose all 3, but, I mean, they're going to be tough, so Liberty might go up.
Yeah, because they have North, East, and Central.
Exactly.
Okay.
So I think Liberty will jump up a little bit. Bakersfield at number 6.
They'll probably hold.
Mm-hmm. So if Liberty jumps up to, let's say, 7, you're looking at that 8 spot, and it's going to be between Buchanan, maybe, I guess,
Sanger. But look at this. Don't know why I didn't realize that. Tulare Union is a base D2.
Yeah. So, again, Tulare Union could maybe sneak into that A. So, that'll be super interesting to watch. But I even think the top half, there might be some shuffling, too. I know Clovis is slotted as a 3 right now. I think if we're doing predictions, I think Central's jumping up to that 3 spot eventually. But, yeah, it's so wild, because I think, like, this year's playoff is going to be – it's going to be so fun, because I think there's legitimately 4 to 5 teams, the 5th maybe on the right night, that I feel like could win it all. And usually it's, what, like 2 that have a chance? And this year is just loaded.
Well, that's one of the things that, you know, Commissioner Toss and his board and the CIF Central Section Office, they looked at the data and they're like, hey, you know, if you are, you know, a 12 seed, 13 seed in D1, right, it's not looking good. And it's like that in a lot of the divisions. But we're like, we want competitive equity. All right, that's the thing. Agree with it or not agree with it. That's the thing throughout the state, throughout all the commissioners. There's 10 sections, throughout all 10 sections. They talk about that a lot. So broke it up in those two divisions. But you're right. We have seen a lot of lopsided playoff games. They don't want that. So when we're going to the top 8, you're going to get good games. Right. And it's we're actually going to have these D1 and the two D1 championships a week before the other games.
Yeah.
Because the other ones are going to be 16. So we're going to have competitive games. Right. And we like that. We love competitive games.
There will be competitive games in the top half in let's say the top division. I still have a problem in that lower division. So that's going to be teams seeded 9 through 16. And how they do it now. There's going to always be a couple Clovis schools in there. There'll be a Frontier or a Liberty in there. And they're going to be matching up against teams like, I don't know, Golden West maybe.
They're 3. They wouldn't. So, I mean, we got Memorial. You got Centennial.
Arroyo Grande. Arroyo
AG.
And it's like, honestly, I don't know how other coaches feel or how other people feel about this. But I think if you are a Clovis school, if you are – I'm going to extend it out to maybe like even someone like Bullard, a team that has a great athletic historic program and a pretty decent size enrollment. If you are Liberty in Bakersfield or Frontier or Centennial, I personally think it's embarrassing to compete in a lower division when it comes to the playoffs. You don't have to go. You can say, hey, we didn't reach our goals. We did not get in the top division for the playoffs. Our season is over. I think I've always thought it's embarrassing to play at a lower division school when you are one of those schools that I mentioned. So I have a big problem with a Clovis school or a Liberty or a Frontier playing in a lower division playoff bracket. I don't think that's right. And some people might love it. Some people, whatever. I talk to a lot of people who also think it's embarrassing. Because, hey, if we're striving to be the best, if you're talking about being the best, that's not playing in the lower division.
Sure.
when you're this Clovis school and you're chasing excellence. So I wish they won it, but it is what it is.
It is what it is. All right. So, yep, Clovis East, Clovis North, Clovis Central, Hanford, Bakersfield, Buchanan, and then Liberty, according to Cal Preps, are the top eight. Then the Tulare Union, watching them last night, they should be a D2 school for sure. They're base D2. They might get bumped up there. You got Sanger, Bakersfield Christian. They're a D3 school, so they wouldn't be able to go up to D1. Then Frontier, Clovis West, Aurora Grande. No one's seen them, right? No one's seen them this year. They didn't play anybody in the Fresno-Clovis area.
Yeah.
I think they've usually played a game or two, so we'd get a look at them, but we haven't this year. Then you got Centennial from Bakersfield, Sunnyside, they're base D3. Then Golden West, they got a good team. Base D3. All right, so...
Well, when you look at... When we scroll to the top a little bit of that top bracket, you saw Hanford last night, and they're slotted as a 5 seed in the toughest playoff division. Their projection right now would be having to go to Collegian Stadium to face the Grizzlies.
And
what would you say about Hanford's chances?
If they played at Central?
Or just in this top playoff division in general?
Yeah, I think that those top four that we've talked about a lot, don't need to mention them again, those top four are a extremely solid top four. We said last week I'd be very surprised if those top four aren't the semifinals, right?
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, could Hanford compete against those guys? Yeah. Defensively, I liked what I saw last night against Tulare. Now, again, Tulare's not one of those top four teams. Offensively, they have some very, very skilled players. All right, Daniel Gomez is a really good quarterback. I mean, I put him in the top five Central Section quarterback. Mm-hmm. When you got a guy like that, you're going to be able to compete. Now, are they at that level? Does any other school, play a similar type offense than they do? Not really. I think defensively, I think those top four would be able to handle Hanford and their schemes, right? It's a little bit different. They'll have five wide. They get to play off with every 5 seconds. I think they need to play, an A-minus game,
mm-hmm.
right, to stay with them and beat those. But, not like Hanford, right? I love Hanford. Ken Sanchez is a friend of the show, great guy. But, I mean, they'd have a really good shot, Austin, let's just say that, at winning that second division, the 9 through 16.
They'd be the favorite.
Absolutely.
But then you run into the problems maybe where it's like, okay, well, Hanford – they have this great season. They get placed probably rightfully in the second division, let's say.
Yeah.
But then I don't know. They maybe have to run up against a Liberty or something, and it's like, well, why is Liberty there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, and at Hanford, when they had their first Central Section titles in 2014, then they won in 15 and won state, and when they won state, that was Division 4, and I think that was Division 3 in our Central Section. They had a really good team. They had some studs on that team. So anyway, yeah, those top four are looking really strong.
The biggest difference too, just to touch on Hanford one more time, is when you play these other schools, and I haven't seen Hanford, so maybe I'm off base here, but it's kind of like the offensive line and the defensive line is where you see those
Correct.
Biggest differences.
Yeah.
So like if they were to face a Central, if they were to face a Clovis North, we know Hanford has those skill guys. They have some good looking athletes that can do some things, but I feel like it's the lines where it's like, okay, I see the difference now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And one thing I didn't mention him all show, but Cordy Glass is a stud running back, a little hobbled, but he had some explosive plays last night going to Oregon State along with Deegan mm-hmm. Rose. He's a senior. So yeah, he's a really good player for the Bullpups. All right, Austin, let's look ahead a bit. So again, sticking with the track, do all signs right now, just looking at the spreadsheet here, do all signs point to that final week, Clovis North and Clovis East? Do you think both teams are going to be 4-0 going to that one?
I'm looking right now. I think so. And if it's kind of been right in front of our face the whole year. I know like Clovis could have maybe stepped up and grabbed someone. Maybe Central would have, but they didn't. I'm looking at these schedules. I think it's going to be 4-0 Clovis East, 4-0 Clovis North that last week of the regular season, and that's going to be so interesting because their styles are so different. And it's like, I think at this point in the year, those two are the best teams in the track. I think we can say it. Doesn't mean they're going to both win this week, but I think they are like the two best teams in the track. And like we said, Clovis North does it running the ball and ball control and playing good defense. And Clovis East spreads you out, and they like to chuck the ball around, and they're both winning games. But it's just so different, and it's going to be so fun because it's gonna be fun.
Well, I mean, I just highlighted something. You know who could really screw that up is Clovis beating Clovis East next week.
They could, and they
and they could.
They could. I think it's going to be hard for that defense to stop Clovis East enough. I think Clovis will find some more success this week than they did against Clovis North. But I think it's a bad defensive matchup for Clovis High, and I'll wait here and be prepared to be dead wrong. But I have looked at that Clovis East Clovis High matchup for a few weeks now, just on the calendar. And my mind is telling me Clovis East is going to I think they're going to win. Right. I think they're going to score some points.
All right. Good stuff. All right. So let's I want to skip ahead a bit. I know, you know, this is part of my personality. I like to have my questions written out, or just more of an outline, Austin.
Yeah,
I skip around
for
a little bit. I want to hit on this, right? So you've you played in the track, right? You played football and baseball. 2011 grad, right? You played on some high-level baseball teams especially. You basically, is it safe to say you, like, grew up watching the track, like football and baseball? Not much.
Yeah.
You're not a real basketball guy, but those two sports were.
Yeah, I mean,
remember going to games when you're, like, 5 years old? Mom and dad taking you, right?
My dad has been coaching for what? Like, I think this is going to be his 35th year. And throughout the 90s, when he was at Clovis High School in the early 2000s, he also did football. So I was going to all the football games. I was going to all the baseball games from when I was like 1 year old. And I don't remember those, but I know I was there in the stands because we got pictures of it.
Got some pictures of it. Didn't your dad coach Kyle Biggs too, like on the freshman team? True story?
Yep, Clovis High sometime in the 90s. But, yeah, Kyle Biggs was one of the quarterbacks that year. He did some varsity football at Buchanan eventually when he went over. He coached with Kyle Biggs. I think Biggs was an offensive assistant at Buchanan while my dad was a DB's coach. So there's a lot of overlap. But, yeah, like you said, I've been going to track stuff. It wasn't even called the track then, but the same team.
Clovis Unified plus Central
exactly.
And other games as well. All right. So I'm curious in your thoughts on some of the more recent football players that have come out of – you know, you got your Xavier Worthy, obviously, and Jalen Johnson that were incredible football players doing great things in the NFL, making some big money, especially Jalen, and he absolutely deserves it. Let's talk about Adam Prentice. Clovis High, Colorado State. What was he? He's a three-sport guy. He was in track and wrestling, shot put, second in the state in wrestling. You know, I followed his career a little bit, right? Colorado State, like I said, South Carolina, undrafted, and then dude just works his butt off, and now you see him on Sundays playing for the Saints. What do you remember about that guy? He's not flashy. He's like a fullback, right? Like,
didn't get
a lot of carries, but
some of those Clovis, so I think he graduated, what, 2015?
15, yeah.
So I was kind of around my brother's year, but I remember those Clovis High teams. There was like a few years there where they made a run into the playoffs like multiple years in a row, and they were never the track champions. They were never the best team in Clovis, but those teams were kind of like how Clovis North is right now. I don't think like not as good, but like super physical, control the line of scrimmage,
big offensive
lineman. Remember a picture in the Fresno Bee. I think Clovis High they maybe upset. They upset someone in the playoffs at Veterans Memorial, and it was either – I think it was maybe Clovis West, and there was a picture of him just muddied up, and it was like Clovis wins, like upsets West, and it was like a low-scoring, like grinded-out game. And that's just kind of like – that game and that picture in the Fresno Bee was like an encapsulation of who like Adam Prentice was as a football player, I feel like. Just like muddy, dirty – like muddy jersey, just covered in mud. I think he had his like fist in the air running over the goal line for a touchdown, and it was just like that's that dude. And I feel like he's carried that mindset, and it's like he's carried like that picture and that headline into like college and his NFL career.
And I love because Rich Hammond retweets posts about Adam Prentice, and you know you see him being the lead blocker and just opening up lanes for you know Alvin Kamara and stuff. And you're like, yeah, that's a Clovis dude right there.
He was playing here like not too long ago, and now he's doing it on Sundays for everyone to see.
And unfortunately, a lot of people remember his dad Gary, who's a beloved member of the you know Clovis administration, passed away his senior year, and he's played for his dad ever since. So great story about Adam Prentice, and yeah, whenever I catch a Saints game or some clips, I mean, you know, checking out is Adam out there leading the way. All right, so a dude that I know you watched a lot of, you know, I first started hearing about him in eighth grade when he got a D1 scholarship offer from BYU, Kendall Milton, right? Buchanan, legend, two titles at Georgia, undrafted, got picked up by the Eagles, and now is on the Cincinnati Bengals practice squad. But watching Kendall for all those years, what stands out to you about that guy?
These are just guys we, like, almost, I feel like, they burst onto the scene and we're super excited. And then, like, we almost take them for granted because of how great they are for so long. And like Kendall burst on the scene as a freshman. He was good. And then sophomore year, he just started dominating. And he dominated as a sophomore, as a junior, and a senior. And I feel like when you dominate that long, like by the time they get to their senior year, it's like you kind of just like, oh, yeah, Kendall's going to be great this year. But it's like you don't like – everyone doesn't appreciate it fully. But that dude, he had the size at Buchanan. He had the speed. He was like – People say different things, but that kid is so humble, and he's like the nicest dude if you ever talk to him.
He came back to the camp this summer, right? That's one of the things they said is like, hey, Kendall's always wanted to give back to the community. Didn't have to. Flew all the way back. Altus Sierra gave a free camp.
No, 100%. And he's just a great dude who was an all-timer at the school. I mean, probably it's going to be hard to see a better running back come out of Buchanan, like skill-wise and physicality-wise than Kendall Milton was.
Is there a play that stands out to you? I think De La Salle, he had a big, long touchdown run. I think the game was on ESPN2. Guys were afraid to tackle him.
They were. And I'll always – that Valley Championship game, I forget what year it was. It was the senior year at Central. Buchanan goes down 21-0 before he even gets a touch on offense. There was like a pick, and it was 21-0 before he got the ball. They battled back. I think they made it like 21-21 in the fourth quarter before Central won. But since that point on, he took over that game, and that was one of the better games I've ever seen him play. And
he went into beast mode. We were on the sidelines.
One of them was like a swing pass that he took for like 60 yards, and that's just the greatness that it comes around every once in a while. It's not every year, but that dude was a physical specimen. It was fun.
And he showed it at Georgia. Yep. What two touchdowns in the national championship game, that blowout. That was the TCU game, right?
For
a couple touches in that, TDs, I should say. And then in that Orange Bowl against Florida State when he had two touchdowns all in the first half.
Yep.
You know, Florida State decided to leave a lot of guys at home because they didn't want to play in that game. But Kendall's like, senior year, I'm strapping up with my guys.
You know what's funny is when he was at Alta Sierra in eighth grade, he obviously dominated. He dominated at Garfield Elementary before that. When he was in eighth grade, I had known the family for I knew who the family was and stuff like that. I've talked to mom and dad plenty of times, but I'm an Ohio State fan, and I emailed the recruiting coordinator when he was in eighth grade, and I was like, Mark Pantone, you need to recruit this kid from Clovis, California. He's an eighth grader. He's going to have offers from literally everywhere in the country. I'm just sending this to you. I know you would find him eventually, but I'm sending it to you as an eighth grader because I think this dude is legit. And maybe contact him like right now.
Yeah.
And then he ends up being close to a five-star recruit, and he had 30 offers.
Did he reply to you, the offensive coordinator?
Hey, I've done that for three players in this section. The same, and he responds every time. It's not long, but he always says thanks for the heads up, like go Bucks. But I've done it for three players.
Awesome. All right, so there's one more guy I want to talk about. We got another 3 minutes or so with Austin Kemp. Adrian Martinez, one of my favorite guys, right? It's no secret. It followed that guy from his freshman year on, obviously missed his senior year. University of Nebraska, sets all these records, these freshman passing records. Scott Frost was a hot mess and didn't put him in great spots, but he persevered, did good things at Kansas State, got hurt again, but then, thought his career might be over, got released in by the Lions, then latches on to the UFL, becomes the MVP. Now he's on the practice squad for the Jets.
Yep.
What do you remember about Adrian? What stands out?
Super athletic, super like long athlete. Was super fast, but his strides made up so much ground. And you want to talk about? I know I just said it for Kendall, but you want to talk about like a kid like that is super humble and like will talk to you, have a normal conversation, like will go out of his way to treat people nice. That's what I remember about Adrian, even like more so than being like the great player that he was, because he was great at quarterback and. If he's healthy his senior year, I think that team wins it all.
Yeah.
Because he was that good. The second guy I emailed Mark Pantone about was Adrian when he was going into his sophomore year. But that guy, he went out of his way to interact with like the young fans that would come to the games. He did it in basketball, not just football. One of like the best role models that you would probably like have to represent your program.
Agree, 100%. Yeah. I got stories that could last a half an hour about him. And one was I brought one of my friends to a basketball game, and Adrian came over and shook my hand, yep. Looked my friend in the eye and shook his hand and said, thanks for coming. So, yeah, I mean, just wish nothing for the best for that guy. Making pretty good money on that practice squad, right? Hey, it's decent money, too.
You'll stick around there forever if they have you.
Yeah, wish he was a little better situation than the Jets. But, hey, they'll get some things squared away. All right, Austin, we got a minute. Time absolutely flies when we get together and talk about sports. I'm putting you on the spot. Mm-hmm. I'm doing it right now, October 12th, year of our Lord, 2024. If you would predict – who is going to win the D1, the top level Central Section Championship? Where's your money going?
A month ago, I would have said Central. I think I'm not going to overthink this. And I'm just going to say Clovis North, because they are, at the end of the day, I'm going back to who's going to stop Jackson Sinfell and McKay Madsen for four quarters. And maybe that's a boring answer. And maybe like I wanted to say Clovis East, don't get me wrong. But I'm going to just not overthink this right now. And I'm going to say Clovis North is going to repeat their physicality, their brand of football. And, I mean, as a high school kid, I wanted to tackle McKay Madsen for four quarters. So I'm just going to say I'm going to go North.
All right. You heard it here. October 12th, Austin Kemp thinks Clovis North is going to win that. Put your name out there a little bit more. All right. Yeah, good job, my friend. I won't make a prediction today. So thank you guys for listening. Really appreciate you. Thank you to Lewis Franklin, Tyler Franklin, Jeremiah Cunningham for helping me out here at First String Sports, and Joe Gomez back at home base. And, of course, Austin Kemp. Thanks for coming on, Austin.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely good stuff. Thank you guys for listening again. We'll talk to you next week. This is the Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN.